Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hello and welcome to Brokenomics. Now, in this episode, what are you going to do? Well, I always listen to you, my patrons, and there's some chap in the comment who regularly pops up and says you should do one on Georgism, so I'm going to do one on that. I've managed to find a guy who can talk well about that, so I have that coming up soon. There's also a couple of you that have been asking for an update on liquidity, asking about AI, stocks, that kind of stuff, recent market moves. So fine, I put together an episode that does all of that. I am, of course, as ever, your diligent performing monkey. So if you need something, you know, just ask me. I'm not annoyed with you, by the way. I'm not annoyed with any of you. You're lovely, of course. I had to do my taxes today. That always makes me grumpy, even though the amount isn't actually that bad these days, because Carl saves me from that by not paying me very much. And all my investments are very tax efficient. So it isn't actually that bad. But nevertheless, the principle of the bloody thing will put me in a bad mood anyway. So there is that. There was a time in my career when I was having to pay 15 grand in tax every month. And I always remember that because at the time I had the occasion to actually visit the NHS. And when I asked the doctor for the slightest, smallest thing, he wandered off in a grump and said in a voice that I was very clearly meant to hear as he was disappearing down the corridor, effing freeloaders, which slightly annoyed me. But then I suppose he wasn't to know I was literally the only person in the waiting room that night who was actually making a financial contribution. In fact, looking around this was a London, inner city London. A&E room, and I'm fairly confident I was paying more than the rest of them put together, if the rest of them put together was even a positive number. So there is that. But anyway, no, so taxes being sorted out today. I will try and remain in good cheer as we go through what we need to talk about today. So what was it? We needed to talk about liquidity, tech stocks, that kind of stuff. Maybe throwing a bit of war in there because that's all sort of relevant to what's going on. Yes. So what is going on? Well, the market is really being shaped by sort of two forces that are now sort of colliding with each other. And one of those is that a debt-heavy financial system that requires more liquidity. I mean, we've gone through that on a number of occasions. If you're new to Brokenomics, you'll have to take my word for it. And a physical investment boom in AI and associated energy, defense even. There's a bit of a boom in that as well. And that is consuming capital faster than the market had perhaps quite appreciated when it got into this. And for years, the market has been rewarding long-term promises because capital was cheap, and therefore, and of course, if you can pile on those future returns, then the market was happy to reward that. But now we're in a situation where oil is rising and bond yields are rising, and well, geopolitical risk is going up, and that AI capex is exploding, and free cash flow from companies is getting squeezed. And it's not like the market has concluded that AI is fake or anything like that. It's not like a popping of the bubble, which people like to throw up in the comments every now and again. But there is definitely a question about when does the cash actually arrive, you know, and how much of that cash is going to have to be continually reinvested in order to do it. So, yeah, we talk about all of that. To cap the big ideas, liquidity explains the market environment, but not every individual price. So it only gets you so far. It only kind of gives you the financial weather. And if money's easy, it supports leverage, speculative investments, and distant future profits. As money gets tighter, cash flow and balance sheet and immediate earnings become much more significant for what the market is wanting to reward. So debt creates itself a eventual bias towards intervention. Because, as we talked about many times, modern governments have to refinance the debt. They're not going to repay it. I mean, they're not anywhere near being able to repay it, and probably won't be for a very long time, if ever. So large debt stocks that need refinancing require functioning bond markets and manageable interest rates. And when that tightening threatens the banking system through whatever mechanism it may get tight, government needs to intervene. But that rescue normally arrives after the financial markets have been damaged, and then it can be quite large, as we've seen in, you know, a number of recent cycles, but, you know, the COVID one being probably the best example. Huge amount of liquidity just gets thrown at it. Now, what AI has done is it's changed from a liquidity beneficiary into a major consumer of capital. So AI originally looked like it was another technology sector. It's going to be supported by cheap money. We're now starting to realize that it requires data centers and chips and its own power stations quite frequently. I mean, a number of these big players, they're spinning up their own nuclear bloody power plants, right? And networks and factories and all the rest of it. And AI is competing as a source of capital with government and defense and, well, everything really, housing, industry, I mean, the lot, crypto. And so the build-out might still be transformational, but it's still producing disappointment in shareholders for a number of participants, which is what's causing the current issues in the market. So the market is moving from a sort of narrative to capital discipline. It's kind of happening in three stages. So, you know, step one, AI is going to change everything. Buy AI. And then it's, okay, build out. Large CapEx proves demand and everybody connected in that chain. Step three, which we appear to be emerging into at the moment, is the capital discipline phase, which is, okay, well, show me the earnings, show me the cash flow, show me the return on capital for every pound or dollar invested. Liquidity, I think I referred to it a moment ago as financial weather. It's not simply money printing. Central bank liquidity is going to influence interest rates and, you know, whether in quantitative easing or tightening and, you know, emergency lending facilities and all the rest of it that come along. But fiscal liquidity, as opposed to central bank liquidity, I mean, that's government deficits is the key one. I mean, Elon often talks about inflation as being solely the product of government deficits. I mean, it's a major one, but I wouldn't say it's the only one. It could also apply to tax cuts funded by borrowing, to be fair, transfers and subsidies, all that kind of stuff. And then there's also, you know, commercial bank credit, which was a major factor around 2008. And it's still a big part of it, which is banks create deposits when they lend. They've been doing that less since 2008, but this is a strong factor going into it. If anything, the US government is trying to get that going again. But mortgage, I mean, a whole bunch of these, mortgage credit will affect housing and corporate credit will invest, will incentivize liquidity in the corporate sector and so on. There's market liquidity, you know, the willingness of investors to, well, and institutions to hold risk. And so liquidity determines whether the financial environment is permissive or hostile to risk takers. While we're building up the layers of this, let's also think about why debt creates the liquidity cycle, okay? That ought to be explained. So government refinance rather than repay the debt. As I'm sure you know, if you've been watching any of these, governments are nowhere near paying back their debt. All they're able to do is roll the debt as it comes due, that previous debt becomes roll, while adding to it. And then that debt that they're adding now will get rolled over in the future as well. So the system therefore depends on investors buying corporate bonds and stable collateral, which is the rest of the market, and banks being willing to lend, which post-2008 has been made increasingly difficult for them, and manageable interest rates, which is a struggle when you've got inflation going on, and confidence in the system as a whole. So you've got this refinancing wall. Large quantities of very cheap, pandemic-era debt is now rolling over at much higher rates than it was originally taken out on. So the problem is not just the enormous amount of debt itself, it's the refinancing. So debt previously financed, you know, in the COVID era, it would have been basically near zero. That's now getting refinanced, anything on the sort of five-year, which a lot of it would have been, anything on the 5 years now getting refinanced closer to 4 or 5%. And obviously, it's a pretty significant move when you're going from 0% to 4 or 5%. So the interest expenditure rises even without new debt being added. And so the sequence looks something like heavy issuance, which is never not the case, really, but COVID was a good example of heavy issuance, leads to higher yield, tighter credit, weaker risk assets, creates financial stress, and that creates a policy response, which is quite often a liquidity injection. And thus the cycle that we get into quite a bit in Broconomics. And obviously, higher debt does not prevent crashes. What it does do is it makes prolonged crashes politically difficult, very difficult to tolerate any sort of prolonged crash for the reasons just articulated. You need that collateral in the system to support the market that it does the continual buying of your debt, the rolling of your debt. So the government just, I mean, it can't accept any sort of widespread mortgage defaults, the 2008 problem, but even pension losses, market losses, you know, banking stress, because it all impacts on falling tax revenue, especially in the US, where a lot of their tax take is a product of how the market's doing. And the rescue normally comes after the damage has been done. So long-term liquidity, especially injections of extra injections of long-term liquidity, it can coexist with short-term market pain. Because the debt burden becomes difficult to service, governments need those lower real financing costs. So policymakers, they favour inflation to the alternative, which would be some sort of cutting government spending, which of course they're not going to do. So the short run process can be, you know, larger refinancing, real yields are going to rise as a result, dollar strengthens, speculative assets will fall, credit will widen, and refinancing becomes harder. But the full cycle is tightening, refinancing pressure, which they don't like, market stress, then the intervention, then liquidity recovers, then you get this asset price boom, the cycle that I tend to operate on because this cycle is so incredibly predictable that you really might as well take advantage of it. And that all then just leads to renewed leverage and excess, animal spirits, all that kind of stuff. So effectively what I'm saying is that the system is structurally biased towards future liquidity arriving. But it can and will, over any short-term period, produce quite nasty downturns before that liquidity injection arrives, because they kind of need to see that stress in the system in order to justify an intervention. So you kind of want to look at, okay, well, what are the indicators here? What are we looking for? And real yields and the dollar are probably the key things. I think that's fair to say. So real yields, the return on government bonds after inflation, basically. And when these real yields are rising, as they are at the moment, safe assets become more attractive. And that long tail of future incomes for things like tech stocks, well, that becomes discounted more heavily or less attractive. And leverage gets more expensive, and speculative assets are going to require a higher expected return to keep up in that environment. And the dollar, a strong dollar, is going to tighten conditions outside the United States. It's going to raise the burden of anybody who's got debts denominated dollars, which is just about everybody across the world. And it's going to attract capital into the US as a hedge. And it will often coincide with, you know, weaker risk appetite. So think about the combined signal as a result of that. If you've got rising real yields plus a rising dollar, that should be hostile to Bitcoin, crypto, high multiple technologies, emerging markets, speculative growth. I mean, all that sort of stuff. Any business that's leveraged. Whereas falling real yields and a weaker dollar generally make the opposite, risk-taking more attractive, more easy. And the liquidity that we talk about often, that enters the system quite unevenly. It's not like it raises all prices equally. It depends on how it comes in. So, I mean, some of these might seem obvious when I go through them, but I mean, mortgage credit, that's going to rise house prices primarily. Venture capital funding is going to improve, you know, technology valuations. You know, institutional flows is going to raise equities and bonds, that kind of thing. You know, insurance companies or pension funds buying, you know, government bonds and, well, any sort of bonds, any sort of fixed capital instrument. I mean, in practice, what we're talking about is the Cantillon effect. The money creation changes who receives the purchasing power first, and then who captures the lion's share of the gain as a result. And it's worth stressing that asset inflation is not consumer inflation. You know, consumer inflation is we're not directly measuring the cost of like buying a house or a business or a portfolio of assets or something like that. A person can become richer relative to the basics, you know, food and clothing, that kind of stuff, whilst becoming poorer to housing, stocks, business assets, stuff like that. So really what I'm trying to describe is that ownership becomes the key dividing line between people, asset owners and wage earners or non-asset owners, whatever category they might be in. You know, asset owners, you're getting the appreciation, you're getting the you know, the collateral from which you can do other borrowing, for example, and you get those compounding returns. Whereas if you're a wage earner or you're benefiting from the flow rather than the stock, if you are going to try and save, you're having to do it from taxed wages. And you'd end up having to hold more cash because you have to, because your medium is wages, cash, spending as a result, maybe some savings on the side. And so, of course, you're left struggling to accumulate any sort of asset base. I mean, breaking out of it is just a difficult thing to do. I mean, it's still better to start, but no, let's talk about, okay, how the risk assets respond differently if we're going to get into talking about assets. So technology, what is it like? What is it responsive to? And it's responsive to yields and future expectations of what it's got coming down the track, the growth speed and the capital availability. Okay, fine. Property is much more related to, you know, well, loan to value, mortgage rates, the bank's willingness to lend, and physical supply itself, of course. Private equity is, again, a bit different. You know, leverage, refinancing costs, exit valuations. Crypto, which responds incredibly well to liquidity and is always worth keeping an eye on for what it tells you about the availability of liquidity in the market. Well, I mean, liquidity, obviously, leverage and speculative risk appetite. So each of these are going to respond differently to the market as it goes. And I am building to the recent market moves. I've just necessary to go through this a little bit of setup on this.
If you enjoyed that content, and of course you did because you are a smart person, then why don't you go over to lotuseaters.com where you can watch the whole episode for as little as £5 a month, which really is not much money at all, and you get loads of really good content.
What's up, everybody? It's Bretzky, and America is turning 250. And I can't think of a better way to celebrate that than playing on an American-owned social casino, SpinQuest.com. With all of your favorite games, live craps, bubble craps, live blackjack, there's no better place to play for free and win real cash prizes. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.